The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
Joining me on the show today is Jeannie Stosser. Jeannie specializes in owning college rentals. And the incredible thing about her business is she doesn't own just a handful of units. She owns 1,500 college rentals. That is just hard to even wrap my head around, owning a portfolio that big. So I want to learn more about the college rental business. But Jeannie, why don't we first just talk about the size of your portfolio? When you first started, did you set out to own so many rentals, or did that just kind of happen?
Well, it actually evolved when I started, in investing in multifamily housing. I had previously taken many classes from different folks that I know very well and who do what they teach. They don't sell tapes. And have learned over the years or began over the years to figure out that if you wanted to get where I wanted to go faster than the single family route, which is what I started in and what I still do, with my company and my family business, to some degree, we build some, we occasionally buy some, but I was extremely interested in the cash flow and in the benefits that came from multifamily housing, whether it was a small set of units or whether it was a larger set of units. But it took several years from the time I started, probably 15 years before I really made a leap from the duplexes and the single families and the things that we had built and kept to be able to make that, make that jump.
With 1,500 units, like what kind of organization do you have? I mean, I can't even imagine how many people that would take to manage that many units. How many property managers do you employ?
We've got probably 15-ish actual properties, and I stand to be corrected on that. It may be more than that, but we have 6 full-time managers on these sites. Some of them are accommodation management duties with assistant managers when the properties are next door to one another. We have a full accounting staff in the office. I have a CFO. I have a controller that works for us. And we just did a turn for all of the properties that we have that falls in the student housing project. And I think they said we had about 65 people on payroll. Now. So we went from 2 to 65, but it took 30 years to do that.
Wow. So let's talk about the student rentals. So one of the things that I guess really the first thing that comes to mind when I think of a student rental is that you're constantly turning everything over every year. I mean, maybe you get lucky and you get some long-term tenants, but in student housing, long-term is maybe 2 or 3 years. So is that a challenge to always be turning places over every year?
No, because we're set up for it. We devised a system over the last 30 years property management for student housing. It's a niche. It's something that we've developed over the years. The lease itself is extremely stringent, and we have parental guarantees on everything we have, whether we're renting by the bed. There's only one property that we just finished that we rent by the bed. Or we use joint and several leases on the individual units that we have on the properties. So what we've done is we've come up with a system of leasing guarantees, credit checks on the parents. I mean, after all, students have no job. They're not qualified to rent there or anywhere else. And so really we're vetting the parents of the students that are living there with income verifications and credit checks and everything else that goes along with it. So in student housing, yes, it's more management intensive. We've formed our own management company, and that's what happens when you go through and get the growth in the large projects like we have. If in the 1 to 10, 12 unit projects, you're not in that position at all, and you're able to work with outside property managers who, especially if they're in a college town, they're accustomed to this, they know how it's done. My suggestion is that you keep your hand on the manager, because mm-hmm. that's really the key to satisfied tenants. And you don't turn every unit every year. Our average turnover in the big picture is probably 50%.
Okay.
You know, it's not a full turn, and never has been.
Okay.
You have your renewals, and then you'll have a replacement.
So when you say rent by the bed, do you have if you have a 3-bedroom apartment, do you have 3 different leases with each person that's renting?
We do on that one. And the guarantor also goes along with that particular lease. So on any given lease on a bedroom, in theory, you will have, unless the parents are divorced or there's only one parent, you'll have 3 people on the lease. You'll have the tenant or the resident, and then you will have the parents guarantee.
Okay.
Or whoever they're going to have guaranteed that will qualify.
So if something bad happens, the kid drops out of school or whatever, you can go after the parents to make sure
we're leasing to the parents. The kid coming out of school, or whether he makes it in school, or whether he flunks out of school or just quits, is really not our issue.
Okay.
And it'll be up to them to replace themselves on the lease, and we're happy to help do that. We'll be glad to recommend replacements. We ask the other roommates that are in that particular unit to please, find somebody you really like. It's not my preference to put people in other people's units.
Mm-hmm.
I think the liability is something we just don't do. A lot of people do it.
Right.
We don't.
Okay. Now, how do you make sure that you're not renting to the kids that are going to be the party house? Like, is there a way to screen the kids to make sure that they're not going to trash your property?
Well, you can screen the kids, but once you get a bunch of them together, it doesn't really change anything. It's how you manage your own property, so whether they're going to trash it or they don't. And we don't have trash property, and we rent to 3,000 students. What we have is a management strategy. We have a great maintenance staff. We have they're trained to be able to go through a unit in probably 5 minutes when they change the filters every 90 days. Any housekeeping issues, we address it, photograph it, send it to the parents, charge for it, fix it. Any damages, whatever it may be, same thing. We photograph it, fix it, charge it, send it to the parents and the student. And it's pretty difficult to miss something that is obvious. Things like putting fish rocks down a garbage disposal, sooner or later you're going to charge everybody, and somebody's going to figure out which one it was and give you a call, because we'll charge everybody until they do.
Right.
It's a system. It's just a system. And there's no reason for anybody's property to be trashed. I don't care whether it's renting to students or anybody else.
You know, that's a really smart system to go in there every 90 days, so that if there is some kind of abuse going on, if the place isn't being taken care of, you're going to know. I mean, you're not going to have a whole year go by before someone's in there.
You should change filters in any type of heating system every 90 days anyway, and maybe in some cases we'd like to see it every 30. But we figure 90 days is about right. We check the units when the kids leave for Christmas. Invariably, we tell them, and they know, not to turn off the heat, and they will. So we don't have a lot of our thermostats and so forth set on automatic low levels. So we go through immediately when they leave, check the unit, check the heating system, and that's another opportunity to flush the commode and see if there's any leaks, or turn on the faucet and see if there's any leaks. Because honestly, they even though they know they should call, they don't. And we're paying the water bill on a lot of these. And so in addition to, damages, which is a pretty close look in housekeeping, you don't have to look long. You can see it. We make sure that the expenses that we are covering aren't being neglected, and you've got a leaky faucet running somewhere or a commode running someplace, and they don't call it in unless mm-hmm. there's a flood.
Now, you have your rentals at two different universities. Is there a difference between the two schools, or are they pretty much, is from your perspective, are they pretty much the same where you're renting to students and it's not really that much, the culture isn't very much different?
Well, in this case, the culture is different. Sheila managed the Radford property for me for a long time, and she's here with me, so I'll let her comment just briefly on that. But the Blacksburg, it's a much bigger school. Your grade point averages are much higher to get into that school. And I'm saying Radford isn't, but it has a little fewer requirements as far as actually getting there. And I guess at one time the reputation of a party school, sometimes I think it is still. But Sheila, what do you think? Don't you think there's a difference between the students?
And there's a difference between the students. Or at least I found that, we had a tougher time qualifying guarantors and things for Radford College than we did for students here in the Blacksburg area.
So if somebody is looking to buy student rentals, is looking at the school, like maybe a higher quality university is going to have better tenants for you. Is that something you would think somebody should look at if they're evaluating?
It is in a way, but in a way it's back to systems and management and how you run your property. And if you stay within the guidelines that we use, which is within a few blocks of a campus, which we started now, keep in mind, 30 years ago, so doing that today is a little bit hard, but you've got to get out and look, and sooner or later you can find, smaller properties, older owners, various of the sundry things that will get you to qualify. But if I'd have stayed in Radford and not concentrated so much in Blacksburg, we would have had more units in Radford. And again, it's location more so in the smaller universities than it is maybe in the bigger ones. You got a little more spread in the larger universities, but I don't know that that's
okay. So the rents for, say, for one of your properties, you can probably rent it for a lot more than say if it was 3 miles away from campus, right?
It is.
Okay.
It absolutely is. And today's trend, especially with your resident that we have, the millennial groups that are coming in through the system are a different kind of student than they were. They're much more instant gratification would be what I would say. One of the famous things that somebody wants to know today is, well, who's going to pick up my trash? Well, I kind of figure that maybe their mom's been picking up their trash all these years, because nobody asks that question unless they're accustomed to not carrying out the trash.
And how long are your leases? Do they go the school year, or is it a 12-year lease, or how does that work?
12-month leases, okay. And we do run with the school year. Our year is August to August. We do have some that run with the semester, just depending on what happens. We carry a very few 6-month leases, but we try to do that with the graduate students because they come in and out at different times of the year. They finish up at different times. And so, but we require full guarantees for 12-month leases. We don't short-term rent.
And then as far as doing showings and ramping things up for the next school year, when does that start?
October the 15th.
Wow.
Or the 12th. And that begins, with the housing fairs at the different universities, and they're both running just about the same thing. So we have our housing fairs. We demonstrate what we have, what type of product that we have, and where it is. And then we send out renewals for the people that are there about Thanksgiving. We'd like them a little earlier than Thanksgiving, but we want them back by the time they leave for Christmas break, so we know what what's going to be available and what we can continue to be leasing on. Now, prior to that time, if we have someone on standby that wishes to go ahead and sign a lease and then be assigned their unit as soon as we know that the non-renewals are coming in or somebody we're not going to renew, they can do that. It's like taking a reservation, but it's a full lease so that it can slide right into place, and then we can go forward with processing the paperwork.
Okay.
Technology itself dictates that we're going to be moving more and more toward online leasing. The technology is not simple anymore, but that's what's demanded by the students that are coming up through the classwork or through high schools and so forth. You know, most of them are carrying a computer around or a telephone or a something at all points in time. So we have the capability of having them go online, read all of the information that's there. Used to, we would sit them down in front of us and actually read it to them and have them initial it, because in spite of what they say, they didn't read it. And their parents probably didn't either. Right. But it's online. It's available for everybody to see. They have to fill out the list that we give them, turn it back in, get the insurance in. We require resident tenant insurance. And it's all in place. So the way we get to meet these students, which is the big question, is, well, when do you see these people? Is the day they come to get their key. And so our folks have their file in hand, all their paperwork in check. If something is missing, they don't get their key. Generally, at that time, we get to meet their parents and so forth. And so we're going, you know, that's kind of the direction that we're going in these days. We don't, we're also not doing checks anymore, which on the smaller properties, you certainly can, or you can go collect your rent however you want to collect it. But it's much easier. We're not interested in getting late fees, and they're pretty stiff. We have a due on the 1st and late on the 5th, and then there's late fees that kick in. We do not want their late fees. We want their rent, and mm-hmm. we want it on time. And so they get kind of used to that system. So we're going to a debit system as far as the parents' accounts are concerned. And even though in our joint and several leases, when we have the parents' guarantee and we're debiting the rent directly from the account, it's like anything else, like a membership to a gym. You know, we automatically mm-hmm. do it. The rent's paid. We used to think that they were moving, or I did, they were moving out of their parents' house and into my house, and they still are. And we do have rules and regulations. And one of the things is paint, which you're kind of interested in the student housing. There's some kind of misconception out there that the law requires you to paint every year, every time somebody moves out, so you can just beat the devil out of the walls. Well, there is no such rule. It's something that's set up by whoever the management company is, and I don't believe that anybody should have to paint somebody's room, and they should be able to beat it to pieces at the end of 12 months. So at the end of 12 months, if there's paint needed in that unit, they get to pay for it, and if it's 2 years, they get to pay half, and 3 years, we paint it all.
Okay.
So that's kind of the way, you know, little things like that.
Yeah. Now, how much training of the tenants is involved? I mean, these are students that, you know, this is probably their first time renting an apartment, that they might not really understand fully how things are done. Is there a lot of training involved to get them to understand everything that's required of them?
Everybody that moves into our building, there's one person that we move into that unit. And when we do, one of our staff members takes them through that unit and shows them where every cutoff valve is, what it's for, what it connects, where the reset buttons are on the garbage disposal, how to turn off the water at the commode if something happens that it's stopped up and it starts to run over. We show them the breaker boxes, what they're for. Most of these kids have no idea what a breaker box is or how to turn on or off a light bulb sometimes. But you'd think if they're 4.0 average and they're getting into college, they'd know that. But honest
right.
to God, they really don't, because
right.
somebody did it for them. We try to walk the tenants through how to turn on a breaker and off a breaker instead of sending a maintenance guy over there to find out that there's not anything wrong with the light switch except that the breaker was thrown. So we can actually walk those kids through that on the phone. And it saves them a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of irritation in us, too. So, you know, you can hold their hands when we try to help them grow up at the same time.
Right. Now, you also own some rentals that aren't student rentals, that regular rentals. Is that a lot easier to manage than the student rentals?
It's easier. It's more simple because you're dealing with people with experience and who are older by and large. I mean, they've been around the block. So this isn't exactly, rocket science on how to take care of the place you're living.
Mm-hmm.
We still do the filter changes, though, and we still check and we get to know our people on a first name basis. And we still have some students in those, but we also lease to the professors and the police officers and the teachers and all this sort of thing. Everybody that's in that type of product has a different requirement for why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. you know, they're student housing, they're going to school, they're working through 4 years of things, and about the time they're becoming a senior, they start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and even they start straightening up. But when I say it's easier to manage, your 12-unit building, for example, depending on what the person who's trying to start this portfolio, are they trying to portfolio build? Is it something they're doing for retirement? Is it something they're doing for extra income? Product properties, they're a little more, I'm going to read some notes here that we did. They're more isolated from each other. They're not paying attention to what the guy in the next floor is doing or what their, what their day is going to be like. You don't really need on-site managers for this type of thing.
Okay.
You could do an overseer in maybe that one of those units and make friends with somebody that's in there to kind of keep an eye on what's going on in the units and give them a little bit of discount or something, but that's kind of how we handle those.
Okay. Now, when you were growing out your portfolio, was it really, really difficult to find available properties? Because they're both of your markets, I mean, that they're small or smaller college towns, and there's limited real estate there. Was it hard to build your portfolio, or is there always things for sale if you're looking for them?
Well, as town, there's never anything for sale. So at the time we started, though, again, we were looking for opportunities for various and sundry things. And at the time, in the 70s and 80s, there was more land than there is available now. But I had a contractor friend that I hired, and I like development. And that's why I said you need to kind of look around. Just because there happens to be something that there's not anything sitting on it, get to know your city codes and what the zoning is and what it will take. And you can start your own portfolio by working out a deal with someone who's a contractor that might even take a piece of that deal to get a new product up and put it on there and start your portfolio that way. And that's the way we did a lot of ours at that time.
Most of your buildings, are they older buildings?
Well, a lot of our properties were in the 60s, 70s, somewhere in that vicinity, but that's where you'll find your product is closer to the university, because back at that time they were able to build brick units. They had larger floor plans, things you cannot repeat today.
Okay.
For any reason. And so in 1990, I'll say 93, there was a property that came up for auction that we were able to buy on the courthouse steps and renovate it. And the guy had it for 9-month leases, and we moved them to 12. And so you're able to create what we call upside potential by looking at seeing what you're looking at and figuring out what you can do with it and then how you can get it financed. So if you work it right, you still got under financing that's out there that gives you the equity position you need. You don't need tons and tons and tons of cash. And it's a matter of negotiation. It's when you start trying to figure out what people want to do with their money, you can give them a better return if they will carry under financing on some of these things, especially your down payment, or in a second position if you've got a good bank. And if you're able to present it correctly. So that's kind of how we started. And then another sister property to that came up, and there were partnership issues. And so we were able to find some friends and family money and bought it. And then this last year, all this time, 3 years ago, we actually bought the last property that the same group of people built. And it was a subsidized housing project right next door to the other one. And we're able to kill the contract that they had. The 15 years was up, give them proper notice, and then we took it to market rents because they were way, way, way below.
Okay.
And then refinanced that property. So we grew by doubling our portfolios and doubling it again, and then we didn't double it again, but we added a whole lot more units. So, yeah, we have some older properties, but they are in, like, new condition.
Okay.
Based on the finance we've done, yeah.
Well, Jeannie, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Let me give you the website that we're just now putting online. It's www.campusmanagement. It's campus, CampusMGroup. com. That's the website.
Okay, great. I will go ahead and put that link on our website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode55. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.